Good afternoon. Raise your hand if you cannot hear me. Great. There's always one. Thank you very much for coming. I know it's all the way up here on the third floor. I'm really happy to see all these people. I'm guessing this is hardcore gamers if you walked all the way up here. So thank you very much for coming. As I was preparing for today, I was thinking about this yesterday, and I actually did the math. It was 392 days ago that right here in this building, I was here at Build talking about the vision for building games for Windows. So literally a year ago, was anybody here last year? See, a few comebacks. It's not going to be as bad as you think. So, and we presented our vision, and I talked about this vision where you, as a game publisher, would be able to write a game once, publish it into our store once, and then have it go across a myriad of devices. At the time, I was just happy telling people about deploying, going in, being able to go into Windows Phone, tablet, desktop, and the vision for Xbox. It's been a year, and not only have we got here, you saw that from the keynote today, but we've also added HoloLens. So it's super exciting for me because today with Windows 10, we now have one operating system that goes across all the myriad of devices from Microsoft. And we have one platform, the universal Windows platform that you're going to be hearing about for the next 3 days, that can let you target all of these devices with one unified application model. Now, how many of you have written a Windows Phone app before, or a Windows Store, or a console app before? So all of you who raise your hand, you're already familiar with this platform. It took us 3 years to get here, and the benefit is you've been using it. When you think about the universal Windows platform, you should think about it like this. It's nothing but the aggregation of all the best features across all of our existing platforms that we had before. If you knew Windows Phone, if you knew WinRT, that's what Universal Windows Platform is. It's a little bit of an iteration. It's that aggregation, and it's that unification that you're going to get. So throughout this session, we're going to cram quite a bit of content, and we're going to leverage some of the things that you already know. I'm Jaime Rodriguez. I'm a games evangelist at Microsoft. And with me is Brian Peake. He's going to do all the heavy lifting today. So at the end, make sure you clap for him because he's going to do all the coding. All I get to do are the slides and a few demos. So we're going to spend the next hour talking about Windows 10 and how you can get the most out of Windows 10 for your games. And in some cases, we're going to play the role of a tour guide where we can actually just tell you, hey, there's this really cool feature. You should go to this session and learn everything about that session. Because some of the topics that we need to talk about could cover a whole hour. And they're here at Build. You're here at Build. So we're just going to point you there and have you go there. In other cases where we think are things or features that are very relevant for games, we're going to dive deep and give you code samples and give you a little bit of everything you need to know. So throughout the game, throughout the session, what you should expect is we're going to talk about those features. Then we're going to show you how to migrate your Windows Phone or your Windows Store game onto the Universal Windows platform. And then we're going to take advantage of new features such as Xbox Live. So we're going to go pretty quick. Bear with us as we go. Before I go there, I do have to give you kind of a demo of what Windows 10 is about from a gamer perspective. Hopefully everybody saw today Joby's... mouse was there. Everybody's hopefully saw today Joby at the keynote, and you saw how, for example, now we have Action Center on Windows 10. Really great way to engage users, right? As gamers, we've always done that where we'd send a notification and we tell users, hey, come back. You haven't played in 72 hours, et cetera. Now with Action Center, those are there. You saw Joby talk about discovery, how with the Windows Store, now your games will be promoted a lot more. The icon is very prominent. If you see the star screen right here, the store icon is quite prominent. So when we promote games, people are going to click on them and you're going to get your cha-ching. Right? So it's a great thing for us to have. Same thing with Cortana. All of these you saw from Joby today. So let me show you some of the things that you didn't see. One of the things that we're doing for gamers is we're bringing the Xbox experience onto Windows 10 and Windows Phone. This right here is the Xbox app. If anybody here has played on the console, you're probably familiar with this application on the console. You get some of the you get to see all of this functionality on the console every day. What you see here is if I go home, you see right here, this is where we're at. I have all my activity feed. These are all the people that I follow. When they comment on something, when they share a video, when they unlock an achievement, I get to see all their activities. This is really useful to you as a game publisher because this is how people discover your games. I can come here, click on a friend, and see what they're playing. I can see what my friends are earning achievements on. Obviously, as we compete, as we play together, I get to see a lot of that. But here, I can also see it with people I follow. I can see a lot more of the activity throughout. I can also chat with my friends. So here, you can see you can chat with your friends, and here you can talk to them regardless of whether they're on an Xbox or Windows or phone. So we're bringing that social graph and taking it everywhere. So it's with us throughout the day. That way, there'll be a lot more engagement. We were actually cramming last night, and one of the friends was pinging up Brian here and said, "Hey, are you going to play? Are you playing tonight?" And literally, we were actually working through some of the sessions. And so we were like, "Hey, no, we can't do anything today." You can see achievements too. You can see all sorts of activity. You can discover all sorts of new games by just exploring what your friends are doing throughout the application. So it's really, really exciting to see all of these come and be with you throughout a continuous experience. Wherever you go, you'll be able to carry this with you and you'll be able to engage. Another feature that you have that you see right here is obviously Game DVR. Everybody here has hopefully seen Game DVR on Xbox One in the last year or so. Super popular feature, you know, now with Twitch and all of the other companies that are doing video online, it's becoming, for gamers, it's becoming one of those must-have features. We're bringing it onto the desktop. And not only can you can see here that I have some Game DVRs that are actually recorded on this PC. I have the ones that I shared from online too, right? And I have the ones that I can see from my community, but the one that I want to show you here is it also has the ones that I recorded on this PC, which means now you will be able to, or users will be able to record your games from within Windows 10. Let me show you how that works. Right here I have Minecraft. This is classic Minecraft, the way hopefully all of you played in the last 10 years. You know, me and my kid used to play this 4 or 5 years ago. He wanted me to let you know he did not have any coaching. I did not have any coaching from him. These are my skills you're going to see, or my lack of skills, to be more exact on what he said. But this is Minecraft. This is not a Windows 10 app. This is not a universal app. This app has been around forever. Everybody knows it. Right? And without me touching and doing anything, I can come here and just, well, let's first launch it. And when it comes out, you see right there, this press Windows G to open Game Bar. This is a feature at the system level. Because I have that Xbox app, now I have that Game Bar at the system level. Now, I've previously identified it as a game. When we identify things as games, the Game Bar will automatically come up. If you have a game that's brand new and is not yet declared to be a game, any user will be able to just come here and press Windows G and get the Game Bar. And from the Game Bar, you can launch the Xbox app. You can actually record or capture a screenshot. You can see some of the settings right here for my recording, so I can control it right here from within the Game Bar. There's a lot more settings in the Xbox app I showed you earlier. So quality and everything, you'll have a lot of control over all that. So again, Minecraft, classic Minecraft, no tricks, no anything right here that we've actually, I'm trying to resize it, but my mouse here is not collaborating. The surface right here is shiny. Hopefully you can see it from there. So now I can just go right here and press Windows Alt R. We love keyboard shortcuts. So right there, it's recording the game. If I wanted to show maybe my mom how to do something like create their own world, I can come back here and it's recording. And now I'm capturing. I can just go in there, create a new world, and let's go into creative mode because she'll be new like I am. And you see right there, it's just recording, it's all happening. If I want to toggle the timer, so because I don't want to see it, I'm going to maybe record for a few minutes, Windows Alt-T will toggle it. And now my recording is there, my world is there, so I can go back and you record it. And right there, that was not scripted, the video experience, but you can see there, it's recording. And then I can go back here and go down to my Xbox app and see all my recordings there. This one, somehow, because it's interesting because it interrupted me to the survey. That one didn't save. Save this one. It surveyed me there in the middle of saving it. Let's go back to the Xbox app and let's see if it saved one there. On this PC, right there, it's Minecraft. So it was there, sorry. So I'm refreshing there and you see the recording that we had. And users right here can actually click on this recording and actually trim it. And then not in the Xbox app that we have today, the one that you'll be able to get with the bits this week, you'll also be able to share from right here, from within the app. Your users will be able to share, and that's how they're going to promote your game. Everybody's going to see it. Discovery, it's an ecosystem that feeds itself. And this is coming, again, onto Windows 10. It's very, very feature-rich. If you look at the functionality that we have, let me give you this. If you look at the functionality that we have, Oh, there's a slide missing here. They have my different slide deck. It's very feature-rich. Like, I showed you features like activity. I showed you a game hub. I showed you chat. I showed you game DVR. All those features are there on Windows 10. A lot of those features are also on Windows Phone 10, on Windows Phone. So you'll be able to get a lot of the same features on Windows Phone. And we're actually making sure that we keep as much parity as we can across all of our experiences. So phone right now, the only thing that's missing from phone is game DVR. If you get the Windows 10 bits, the Windows Phone 10 bits, you're not gonna have game DVR there. It's something that we're looking at. We're trying to figure out what the right experience would be there for game DVR on phone, but it's something we continue to explore and you should expect improvements around. So all those features right there, you didn't have to write a single line of code. You didn't have to do a universal app. You didn't have to do anything, and you're already going to benefit from that on Windows 10. Now, there's other things that you're going to get just from moving onto Windows 10. For example, when you bring your game onto Windows 10, you can now start running on DirectX. As you recompile and you start porting your game to Windows 10, you'll get benefits from the platform itself. This is kind of operating system and platform features that you're going to get that you don't have to write a lot of code of. Hopefully here, everybody in the room is familiar with DirectX 12, right? We announced it last year. It's our new API for Direct3D. With DirectX 12, what you get is a lot more control over how you render. We have optimized it a lot. We made sure that you have a lot of control on how you talk to the GPU so that you can optimize your rendering quite a bit. It squeezes every ounce of performance from all of your games. Now, if you're like me and you write higher level games, like you write on Unity or Unreal or any other higher level frameworks, middlewares, no worries. All the middleware providers are already using DirectX 12, and you're going to benefit from everything they do. So in your case, you're just going to get the benefits for free. You get more performance, you'll get better rendering for free by just using libraries that are already taking advantage of DirectX 12. Another area where we made significant improvements that you as a developer would benefit from just from moving to Windows 10 is the SDKs. Our SDKs are significantly larger today than they were a year ago. Just for context here, I don't have the numbers because they're never accurate and we were shy about it. But just for context, WinRT grew over 8,000 new APIs. Think about it. We brought in APIs from console. We brought in APIs from phone. We had all these Windows APIs already. So we grew over 8,000 API. That's probably one of our largest updates ever. That's just on the WinRT side. On the .NET side, we also grew about 2,000 APIs. And what we did there is, remember, we have different profiles. So we have .NET on the desktop, and we brought in a lot of those APIs to the Windows Store, to the actual universal platform, so that you would have better compatibility across, right? If you've seen the profiles, there were a few classes that people were saying, well, I wish I could use this class over there so that I don't have to write my code and I can share more code with desktops. We've done that. We brought in 2,000, and we will continue to bring more APIs as we go forward. Now with Windows 10 and Flight In, we can actually add APIs much faster than we've ever been before. In the past, it's always been the, oh, we cannot do that because we got to ship a whole new framework. With Flight In, now we can start adding more libraries for you as we go, and we'll continue to do this as we go. And the last one that I want to highlight is the Win32 and Calm APIs. This one is special to me because here we brought only about 1,000 APIs, but those APIs are ones that really, really matter for us as gamers. This is some of the work that we've done over the last year with Unity and Unreal and Marmalade and a lot of middlewares and NVIDIA and other partners that were related to gaming that came and said, look, the universal platform is great, but I really wish we had these APIs. Things that matter a lot, for example, threading, sockets, right? If you were here 2 years ago and you hear about the platform, you were like, oh, no sockets, that's weird, right? And it didn't make sense to all of us, right? So as gamers, it was a pain to have to rewrite. Well, we've heard you, we're bringing all of those back, and those are the 1,000 APIs. So even though the number is not outstanding, it's a number that really, really matters. Heap, virtual memory, things that we are really, really hard to do if you don't get the operating system level APIs, those are the ones that we focused on. I'm not going to talk much about media, but there is, because there's a lot of sessions that build about it. But two of the improvements I wanted to highlight is low latency audio. That's a common pain, and we've decreased the latencies down to nothing. So for those of you who have in the past said, I really want lower latency audio, we no longer buffer, so you can really control how much audio you render and how low your latency is. And we've also added a myriad of caching APIs. I see Steven there. He'll have a session tomorrow. And we owe him a big favor, so make sure you come to his session tomorrow. You'll hear about the favor later. If you want to learn more about DirectX 12, Max McMullen has a session also tomorrow, and he'll dive and give you the update on the APIs that have changed from last year and how we are with regards to shipping this year, which is pretty much done. And we have really great support from NVIDIA, AMD, and all of the hardware providers. Now, moving on to the universal Windows platform. Everybody who's been here, had built before, has coded an app before, has at some point seen this slide. This is actually the new universal Windows platform slide that we're showing around. I saw this slide 5 years ago when we introduced Windows Phone. I saw this slide 3 years ago when we called it WinRT. The point here is the platform hasn't changed. Everything that we have in here, there's a lot of improvements, so don't get me wrong. I can go in there through, you'll go through sessions at Build, there'll be a session app model, and you'll go in and hear about new background in APIs. There'll be a session on packaging, and you're gonna hear about how we increase the package sizes so that now we can fit any game, right? Because the package sizes are so large. There'll be a session on the store, and we're gonna talk about the one store. There'll be a session on tools, and we're gonna talk about graphics debuggers and all sorts of different tools that come in for games. So it's the exact same platform you're familiar, and we're continuing to innovate. So just because I'm not gonna spend a lot of time on this, don't be fooled. You'll have 3 days full of sessions here, and there's some sessions that I highlighted as a reference here, and you'll see them as a reference at the end of the presentation. Let's get onto our games, because that's what we wanna get into. So we're gonna port a game from Windows Store onto Windows 10. So, and that's where Brian comes in. Can you introduce us to the game?
I can do that. Switch over to my machine. So this is a game that we wrote. It's a really simple demo, and the whole point of the demo was to teach students how to write video games. So you're not gonna see the most flashiest, Titanfall-est thing ever here. It's gonna be a very simple game. So what we have here to start is, I'm gonna show you the game running as a Windows 8 application in Windows 10. So I just press F5 here to run the app as it exists. You can see it starts up, and you can hear the background music somewhere coming out. Do you hear that? Okay, I don't know if it's in my head because I played it so much or if it's actually coming out of a speaker. So you can tell this is a Windows 8 app on Windows 10 because at the top left you get the hamburger menu that has what used to be on the charms bar. You get the button over on the right that allows you to put it into full screen, which is how Windows runtime apps used to run. They were always full screen. But because this is Windows 10, this actually lives in a window. You can move it around the screen. So what we need to do is to turn this into a Windows 10 app. So to do that, what I did was I created a new universal app project, and I brought my code over. I didn't change anything. I literally just copied and pasted the code as a, you know, add as a link over to here. And we have the exact same code running, just with the universal wrapper around it, which basically has a new package manifest and whatnot. So if I run this version of the app as a Windows 10 app, I'm going to show it to you on the phone first because the phone is similar to Windows 8. You know, the phone always runs full screen. There are no windows. There are no concepts there. So you can see this is now running in the Windows 10 phone emulator as a universal app. I can go in here and I can actually play the game. I'll tap start. So that's a very simple game. Simple maze game here. The little blue monster I'm controlling, the red monster's chasing me around. The glowing icons in the corners are Windows 10 features. And the point of the exercise for students is that every time they add a new Windows 10 feature to the game, they can add a new icon as well. So your goal is to run around and eat those glowing icons because they're worth more points than the regular dots. But as you can see, it runs on in Windows Phone, and everything is happy because it's a full screen app. But when you move to Windows 10, there are other considerations to deal with windowing.
Yep. Can we switch?
We can switch.
We got this switch back and
there
forth.
We go.
So Windows 10, right? In Windows 8, it was full screen. You could snap, but it was always full screen. Your app didn't have to worry about windowing. On Windows 10, first of all, you still have control. So if you want your game to run on full screen, great. We give you an API that you can programmatically call enter full screen mode. Right? If you want your API to run a specific aspect ratio, we give you an API that it can say, hey, here's my preferred size, here's my minimum size. We give you a lot of control. That said, ultimate control relies with the user. So the user can at some point decide, look, I'm gonna drag this window from here to over here, and I'm gonna put it right here, and it's gonna be this size. Therefore, as you write or as you move your game from Windows 8 onto Windows 10, you will have to support windowing. If you do support windowing, we recommend that you actually, you know, make sure you handle full screen mode. And another thing that you actually have to do is support activation and deactivation. Now where you're running windowed, the user can have two windows, and you are right there, you're visible, and then the user goes in and clicks on email or, you know, whatever it is, Facebook app to send a message or something, and you lost focus, and you need to make sure you pause your game. So you need to make sure you handle the activated and deactivated event in your game. And it's pretty easy. So Brian, why don't you add that to the game?
Switch back over and show you how to do that. So this is the same project, haven't changed anything. We just toggled back and forth. So I'm going to jump into the main class. This is a mono game application, a mono game game. So if you are familiar with the architecture there, this will be familiar to you. So the first thing we're going to do here, well, actually, let me run it without making a single code change. So you'll see it running in Windows 10 in a window. So it starts up. That this was the last size that the window, when the user closed the application, this was the size that they had the window. So you can drag it and make it bigger or smaller. But for example, we can come in here and say we want to have it always start up at a specific size. So there's a new class that exists here in Windows 10 called Application View. And if you look at the IntelliSense on this, we get a few things here. We can set the preferred launch size. We can set the preferred windowing mode and things like that. But what we're after is we're going to get the view for the application view for the current window, and we're going to call try resize view. We're going to pass in a new size, and this game runs at 1920 by 1080, so I'm going to pass in 50% of that. So it's going to run basically on a window that's about half the size of the screen. And you see this is called try resize view. You'll find a variety of these methods that start with try. These will return a Boolean to you, so you can tell whether or not you successfully resized. Reason for this is try resize view doesn't necessarily make sense on all platforms. You can't resize the window on phone because phone is always full screen. When you're in tablet mode on a touch device, everything is always full screen. So this doesn't throw an exception. It'll just tell you, oh, I didn't change view. So if you need to do something because of that, I failed. So with that in place, we can run the app now, and you'll see the app resize. So it'll start out a certain screen size and then shrink. Or grow, or actually, I probably was already at that size. Let me go ahead and make the window bigger and close. So it saves that new size and run again. And I see the window there shrunk down to that specific size that we set. Now, there's a couple other things that hang off of here. This is try resize view. We can set, we can figure out if it's been snapped to the left side or snapped to the right side of the screen. We can get the title bar and set the title bar. We can set that preferred minimum size and whatnot. A variety of things here that you can mess around with. So that's the window resizing. The next thing we want to add is full screen mode because it's a game. It should, you know, you definitely want to support full screen. So I've already written a little bit of code here to handle the input. So I'm listening for the F11 key. So my input manager class here will let me know when someone has pressed the F11 key. And when that happens, again, I'm going to use that same application view object, and I'm going to check the is full screen mode. If this is true, we're already in full screen. If it's false, we need to enter full screen. So simple toggle here. If we're full screen, we're going to exit full screen mode. If we're not, we're going to enter full screen mode. And again, you'll see here there's another method with a try. So this is going to return that Boolean that's going to tell you whether or not it succeeded. So if we run the app this way, you'll see it'll start out in a window. And then I can press F11 here, zoom it to full screen, press F11, toggle it back. Just that simple to do it. And of course, you can, you know, call this at the start of your app. You can set it as the preferred method, whatever you want to do. But always give the user the option to be able to toggle back and forth. Everything here is a window now, and not everything lives in full screen world. So then the final thing, as Jaime mentioned, was activation and deactivation. So MonoGame handles this a little bit for us, so let me show you the code as it exists in MonoGame in the Game Window class. So what they do is hook into Core Window. Every Windows 8 and Windows 10 application has a Core Window, and there is a .activated event. So we're going to hook that event and basically check the Windows activated event args here. If it's set to deactivated, we set our global isActive property to false. If it comes in and it's activated, we set is active to true. So, oops, back in my code here, I'll uncomment this chunk. So I check here in my update loop. If I'm active, then I'm going to resume any sound effects that I had paused from becoming deactivated, and I'm going to call the logic in order to update my screen. Otherwise, if I'm not active, I'm going to pause all sound effects, and the screen update isn't going to happen because it's not part of that else clause. So let me turn the music back on here so you'll be able to hear the music start and stop. We'll run the app with this in place. So annoying title screen music. We go back to Visual Studio, music stops. Go back to the app, music continues. And you can see here, we'll start the game, we'll let the monster run to a certain position. And we'll stop, music stopped, wait a couple of seconds. If we go back, you'll see the red monster will be in the exact spot where we left it because we're handling the deactivated event properly. And he ate me. So that's windowing, that's full screen, and that is activate, deactivate. In a nutshell.
Flip it.
Jump back to
your slide. So literally, that's all you have to do. Under 10 lines of code, most games actually work. But there will be a session on navigation and windowing on Friday. So if you want to go learn every little detail on the APIs, there's a really great session on Friday that Robert's delivered. I saw the rehearsal, and it was really great. Now, that's half the work. The reality is us telling you how to handle windowing is not the heavy lifting. You will still have to come up with a design strategy for your game. You'll have to decide, well, when I'm full screen, I want to scale the content, or maybe I want to create an adaptive layout, or I want to, you know, be a responsive design where I fluidly flow certain things, et cetera. That takes a whole hour, but the advantage for you is that we've already recorded that. At GDC a month and a half ago, Todd Williams from the Fable team came and recorded a session and said, hey, here's, you know, what you need to think about. Here's all the options that you should be considering. So watch that whole session, and then from there, you'll come up with a strategy. The platform supports everything. So, and by, I think the way I think about games, most games will have maybe a combination. Like in some cases, you'll just want to scale, but often you will have to do scaling and either an adaptive layout or something else along with it. So the platform will support everything, and you don't have to do a huge amount of rework because you've been thinking about these problems forever in other platforms, and it's going to be able to you're going to be able to bring those same patterns onto our platform with no problem. I just wanted to point out the video from Todd because it's really useful. Now, the next thing, windowing is the beginning. The next thing that we talked about when we did the outline was, we got to handle input. And we thought about two things. The first one is, hey, what's changed on pointer? Or what's changed on mouse and touch? If you remember Windows or Windows Store, 2 years ago, we came back and we said, look, we're always going to make touch seamless along with mouse. So we're going to aggregate those into this one class called the Pointer API. And regardless of whether the user are using touch or whether you're using mouse, it's all going to go into Pointer. So as long as you handle Pointer, you'll be taken care of. And if you've been writing games, you've been using this pattern for the last 2 years. Nothing there changes with the universal Windows platform. We've added some really cool features to Ink and other areas, so we've added improvements. But for your games, he didn't have to change anything in the game, so there was nothing to say right there on mouse and pointer and touch. So moving on to text, we have a lot of improvements in text. I spent a lot of time in the last 2 years porting games from other platforms into Windows, and text was one of our biggest pains. Has anybody ever heard, like, how to do text on their games and then how to maybe hack a text box where you put a hidden text box somewhere and then you just set focus to it so the zip would come out, right? Or some of us would go as far as pretending to be a text box through Automation Peer and actually doing that. Most of those workarounds were solvable and they worked, but it was always kludgy and I always felt like, oh, there's got to be an easier way to do it. And today with the Universal Windows platform, we have the easier way to do it. Here's what we're going to give you. There's an input pane class. And that input pane class, you have control over when you show it, you have control over when you hide it. When you do show it, when we do show it, or even when the user taps on it with touch and the input pane comes up, you get an event that says, oh, this is showing. So now you know how to affect your game. You can pause your game. You also get the coordinate system. If the input pane is docked, you get the rect size that says, hey, here's how much of the area we're going to occlude. So you have full control over how you handle keyboard. No more of those hacks, no more of that code, and it's relatively easy to show. So why don't we go ahead and code that?
Yep. So if you noticed on the menu for my game, there was an option for enter name, where you can put in your name and the character will recognize you as that name, puts it up in the score display. So to do that, I've got a very simple dialog box that I wrote. It's all written in MonoGame. It's not a Windows dialog box. And basically, when I call the show method from my game, I call input pane, get for current view, dot try show. And when I call hide on my dialog box, I call try hide. Again, these are try methods. You get the Boolean that tells you whether or not it's available or whether or not it succeeded. And the reason for this is if you're on a desktop and you have a keyboard connected, it's not going to pop up the device. It's not going to pop up the input pane. If you don't have a touch screen, it's not going to pop up the input pane because you can't touch a non-touch screen. So in this case, what I'm going to do is I'm going to set my laptop here to tablet mode. So the app now will start up in a full screen mode. And in tablet mode is when you'll see an input pane. Let's shut off the stupid music and go down to enter name. It'll pop up. And now I can type my name in this box. And you see it shows up in the top right corner. Press enter. And what's great is this responds to all the standard keyboard events that you're already used to. So if you've already written your game to support keyboard, you already wrote your game to support input pane. You just actually need to show it and hide it. That's all you need to do. Very simple.
Two lines of code. I see you have some friends that I've worked with in the past, and we've implemented Automation Peer, and it was a couple hundred lines of codes. No refunds. Okay, that was good advice at the time. No refunds. We're even now. We got it in there, and it's in the platform, and you'll be able to use it going forward. So another area with input, of course, is now that we have this myriad, this huge family of devices, we need to worry about the controller. And here's a good example of where we bring and how the Universal Windows Platform brings the best stuff from everywhere. We've always had X input on the desktop, pretty popular, great API. It served us well for a few years. It's very simple, yet very powerful. Now, the Xbox had a gamepad class, and they've been working on it for the last few years. It's more modern. It has, in my opinion, a better object model. It was more future-proof for us, so we felt like, hey, we got to bring the best-of-breed APIs. And this was a hard choice because we were like, oh, XInput is used everywhere. It's on desktop. It's all that. But we finally said, hey, you know, Gamepad is the better API, is the one that we're going to invest into the future. So let's bring that onto the Universal Windows Platform. And that's where you're going to be using going forward. Now, with the Gamepad class, you'll be able to support all platforms. So Windows Mobile, desktop, Xbox One, all of them will be supported. Right? If we come up with a new platform later where controller makes sense, we're going to use this API, and this is the one that we're going to stick to. So you'll be able to continue to leverage the knowledge and the code that you have. The API is feature-rich, so multiple gamepads, headset, everything that you would expect to stay from the gamepad is all there. Now, for those of you that were using XInput, what we've done is we said, look, we don't want you to throw away all your code, so why don't we create a little wrapper? XInput was very simple. It only had 5 methods, so we created a wrapper that actually goes in and underneath the scene, it actually uses all the Gamepad APIs, but it gives you the method signatures for XInput. So that way for you, you include the header, you just swap the library that you link against, and you're done. Right? So very easy for you to port your game and very easy for you to actually reuse your code without doing anything. Now, I do have to give you a caveat. On the builds that you're going to get this week, Gamepad is not in there. The APIs are defined, but they're not implemented. So again, just wait a little bit until the first flight or the next flight where this comes in, and then you'll be able to have them by RTM. It's a very simple API. Anybody here who's been using it on Xbox, it's the exact same APIs. We didn't change the name, so you'll be able to reuse your code very, very easily. Right there, we could be done, but they told us we needed to fill a 60 minutes worth of talk. In my opinion, you just handle everything you need to have a good game, right? You had a good gameplay to begin with, even till Brian's is questionable. It's simple by design. But we had a great gameplay to begin with. So, you know, we added the window in. We added all the input. So we're there. We can start taking advantage of new features. And here, why don't we go ahead and go for the big enchilada, the really huge innovation that we have for gamers on Windows 10, and that's Xbox Live. Everybody here is familiar with Xbox Live services, right? It's our Xbox, you know, one social graph. It's our network. It's services that have been proven. They scale. They've been really, really solid. We have lessons or several years of lessons learning the APIs. So let me tell you what we're bringing onto Windows. First of all, we're obviously bringing identity and social, right? So you'll be able to get a person's profile. You'll see their social graph. You'll see their game clips. Pretty much everything that I show you on that Xbox app, all of that functionality comes with identity and profile, and you're going to get all that. The next thing that we're bringing is the data platform, so that if you want to write achievements and get real-time activity and do a lot with the data, you will also get all that. And then the last time that we're giving you is multiplayer. Now, if you're familiar with Xbox Live, that's everything. So we're bringing all the services, we're giving you the same APIs or equivalent APIs, and you'll have feature parity as we go across. Now, obviously, we'll do the right thing by the form factor. Not everything makes sense on every device, but our intent is to bring as many things as we can such that the platform benefits from having the feature and it doesn't detriment to the overall experience, because we want the user to have a great experience across our whole device family. So with that, Brian, how hard is it to add Xbox Live onto our game?
It's pretty simple. So Xbox Live right now is distributed as a NuGet package, so you download that. And I've already done the back-end work here, so you can see in my packages.config, I have a reference to the Microsoft Xbox Live SDK. So the first thing that makes sense to do when you're writing your game is you want to have people sign in, because you want to get their profile and their gamer tag and that information. So that's what we'll do with this game. So extremely simple. You grab the user object here, lives in Microsoft Xbox Services System, and call sign in async. And that's going to return to you an Xbox user object. Okay? From there, the next thing we need is an Xbox Live context for that user. Now, the context object is basically your interface for every service that you want to talk to. So you create one simply by newing it and passing in the user that you want associated with the context. And then to pull back the profile information, we're going to call into the profile service. As I said, all these live off of context. If we look at IntelliSense, there's the achievement service, leaderboard, matchmaking, presence. Every service lives off of context. So we're going to use the profile service and call get user profile async, passing in the Xbox user ID of the person that we just signed in. What we're going to get back from there is a profile object. And off the profile object, you can grab a variety of things. Oops. You can get the account tier, so if they're gold or silver, you can get their current gamer score, their gamer tag, their user ID, the Xbox user ID, which is just a unique identifier that identifies them to Xbox Live. So what we care about is the gamer tag. We're going to assign that to our gamer tag property. And with the gamer pick, we're going to display both of those things in the top right corner of our screen. Gamer pick is handed to you as a URI. So you can actually look at this in the debugger, launch Internet Explorer or Spartan, hit that URI, and you'll get their full-size gamer pick. So I just wrote a chunk of code here that converts it to something that Monogame can use, which is a texture 2D, and I assign that to my gamer pick. So if I go back to my original monster game here, I'm going to uncomment the line that signs us in, calls that Xbox Live Manager, and I've encapsulated all the Xbox Live stuff into this Xbox Live Manager class just to keep it all in one place. So if we run this, you'll see that we're going to log in. And it's going to log in with the Microsoft account of the user that logged into Windows 10. So when you set up, it always asks you, do you want to log in with a Live ID? You type in your Microsoft account, formerly Live ID, formerly Passport, formerly 17 other things. But you log in with that, and that's the one that gets tied to the application. Now, if you are a domain user or a local user, it'll prompt you instead. It'll say, hey, what Live ID, what Microsoft account should I use for this? And you can type that in for that application, and it gets tied to that app. But as you can see here, we already logged in. We've got the gamer tag. This is a dev account, so it's got kind of a cryptic name to it. And one of my favorite gamer picks, the picture of the angry toast. So really, three lines of code to log into Xbox Live and pull back the profile information of that user.
Now, this code really matters. Can everybody read that? I just want to make sure, because these are the three lines of code. As we go forward, these are the lines that we want you to remember. Can everybody read it? In the back? You're good? Okay, good.
Sign in, context, get user profile.
Yep. So I can see. Yep. So I want to highlight, before I move into the next slide, I do want to highlight out there's a really great full one-hour session. Again, we did it all at GDC. By the way, all of our gaming content this year, everything that we had to announce for the whole year, we announced at GDC. There's 16 hours of videos in Channel 9. Go there and watch it. If you were at the keynote today and you're thinking, hey, where's all the gaming content? It was done a month ago at GDC. Phil Spencer stood up on stage, shared the vision. It's a great vision. We're super excited. So make sure you go back and watch a lot of that if you're feeling like, hey, I want to dive deeper into games. And Build is all about helping you dive deeper into the platform. We have this overview session, so we can point you to that. But you should be watching that so you can get the most out of it. In this case, BJ, the principal PM who manages this API, had a really great session that we learned everything from. That's how we coded our app. And it was three or four weeks ago. So literally within a couple of days of watching his video, we were up and running once we got the SDK. So moving on, so we have profile. We want to have data, right? We want to have achievements. We want to have leaderboards. We want to have that. So what I want to do is I want to explain to you how the data platform on Xbox Live works, just because it's really cool, and then you'll see some of that from Brian's code snippets. Here's how it works. So first of all, you write your game. And when you write your game, you define a set of events and, you know, the set of data that you want to collect. So you're in control of over what you want to do. And you actually define the data and then start firing the events to a spool through the SDK. And the event is the SDK is right there just listening. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to worry about communicating back to the server. You don't have to do anything, you know, cryptic. You just pass it on to the events pool, and they automatically pass it on to Xbox Live on the cloud. So from here on, all the green code you don't have to write, which is really good, because that's where the hard stuff is. That's where the several years worth of work that we've invested into where we lie. So we have a data receiver that, you know, is actually just listening for all those events. They pass it on to a stats engine that actually interprets all that data, and then that stats engine actually manages and says, oh, these are going to go into achievements. This is going to affect a leaderboard, you know, and from there we also derive presence. And then if you want some of the data back, you can actually get it back to real-time activity. Right. So again, all of the green stuff, that's the heavy listing. That's the heavy lifting. That's Xbox Live. That's stuff you don't have to worry about. You're over here in control of, hey, these are the events I want to do. And then you later on go back and define your achievements, and you go back and define all the things that you want the user to have. This also means the platform is flexible such that you can go in there, define your events and your data, and later on add achievements or tweak on the back end how your game is playing. Right, because we don't have to. All we're doing is passing the data, and there's this stats engine that's interpreting and saying, "Oh, when they reach 100 in these, they're going to reach this achievement. They're going to earn this achievement." So you don't have to worry about all that when you ship your game. That way, you don't have to download another 5 gigabytes of data just because you change achievements or anything like that in your game. So that's their data platform. It's very cool. And let's see what we can do with achievements right here, Brian.
Yeah, so I'm going to show a sample on how to do leaderboards and achievements. So I've defined a leaderboard. I've defined event data for my game, and as Lami said, it can be anything. I had it be the number of times or how many dots I've eaten. So that's kind of like my score. So I've got data already that lives up on Xbox Live. It already lives in my leaderboard. We just want to display the leaderboard on the screen. So to do that, did I not switch? There we go. Now I can switch. I have a method here called getLeaderboardAsync, where I pass in the name of the leaderboard that I want to retrieve from Xbox Live, and it's really just one line of code to pull back the leaderboard. I use that context object again. Remember, that's the interface to all of our services. Call the leaderboard service, get leaderboard async, passing in the name of that leaderboard. That's going to return to me a leaderboard result, and inside of there, I'm going to have a collection of rows, and each row is going to be, you know, one line of the leaderboard. So what I care about is I'm going to pull the rank, that's first, second, third, fourth, all the way down the line, the gamer tag of the person at that rank, and then this item has the item collection has a series of values that are the events that I told it to track for my leaderboard. So I already know that the zeroth element of that is the thing that I want to display on my leaderboard. So I add all those things to a collection and then display them on the screen. So if I run my app here and bounce down to leaderboard, see, it went up to the server. It's actually very fast. And pulled back. There are five people that are on my leaderboard, the global leaderboard currently, their gamer tag, and then their score according to how well they played the game. Now, that's the global leaderboard. So if you had a really popular game, obviously mine isn't because there's only five people, but if you had a real game, you might have more than five people playing. So you might have thousands of people on the leaderboard, and you probably don't want to have someone page all the way through thousands of pages of game of leaderboard stats to find there. So there's a couple other methods you can do here. We can call .get leaderboard for social group async. That'll return just a leaderboard with just that logged in user's friends. So if you want to show them how they're competing against their friends, you can show them that view. There's also a get leaderboard with skip to user. So I can say, well, if I'm in 700th place, only show me from 700 on. And that way you can immediately just jump to that screen and show where they rank against the rest of the world without them having to go find where they live in the full list of global leaderboards. So that's leaderboards. Pull that back, very easy. For achievements, we want to pull back the list of achievements that are associated with our game and some more information about them. So as before, use that same context object. We're going to call the achievement server this time. We're going to call get achievements for title ID async. We're going to pass in the user that we want to get the achievements for, because this will tell us, if we pass in the user, we can determine if they've unlocked the achievement or not. We'll pull back all types of achievements, so achievements and challenges, order them default, and return just a maximum of 10 for right now. That'll give you an achievements result, which contains an items collection. Inside that items collection are a list, or each one of those items is an achievement. So we're going to pull the name, the description, the rewards data, which this is currently set up to be a gamer point reward. So this is the number of points associated with that achievement, whether or not it's been achieved. And then, as with the gamer pick, you'll get a URI that maps to that achievement image. And if you guys have played on Xbox One, you know the achievements are these big high-res 1920 by 1080 screens that you can use as backgrounds in your dashboard. So these are really high-res quality images. So we just pull those things back, and now we can draw that inside of our game and get a nice integrated experience. So I'll jump down to achievements, and it will load them up. So this game has 5 achievements here. So this, again, this was the name at this line. This is the description. This is the score. The image in the background is the image associated with the achievement. So really, each one of these things was, you know, just a, you know, a single line of code to retrieve the data, and then whatever code you want to write to format it and display it. Very, very simple.
Yep, tap it. Now, it's interesting. He just said it right. It's one single line of code to retrieve the data, and then I assure you that displaying the data is a few more than, or a few more lines of code. It's definitely more than one. So one of the things that's really cool and it's brand new that we're doing for Windows 10 is we're adding this new feature to the Xbox Live SDK called Title Callable UIs. And what this is kind of a standardized workflow. Certain things you do over and over in your game, and in some cases having consistency on how many games do it is valuable. So we're giving you some of these title callable UIs such that you can actually, in just a few lines of code, much less than you would if you'd render everything from scratch, you can actually call specific workflows. For example, right here, live profile card. Whenever you need to show somebody's profile, we give you a card that you can actually use. It's consistent. All users will be familiar with it because they might see it across other games. So it's a good way for you to very quickly get some, you know, profile card up and running without having to have a custom experience if that's the way you want to go. One that I see a lot is multiplayer invite. This workflow is actually kind of hard. Inviting multiple players, you know, displaying them and making sure that you can click on the right sequence of buttons, et cetera, that's actually hard. So by us giving you the flow already implemented, you just lay it in there, a few lines of code, you're done, right? And the same thing we do with achievements. So you get the best of both worlds. On one, Brian showed you one line of code, you get all the data, you have full control over how you render it. You can create this really immersive brand new experience. We love those. And on the other one, you can say, hey, I don't think I need that. This is just a profile card. I can go with the standard UI that users will be familiar with, few lines of code, and you get the best of both worlds because you didn't have to write a lot of that code. So that's what we have with title callable UIs. Now, the Xbox Live SDK today, you've seen it. It's easy enough. I'm sure you're wondering, okay, how do I get it? First of all, it's not on the platform. It's not on the bits that you actually are going to get this week. It's a special or a different SDK, but right now we still have in preview mode. And the way to get it is to just join the ID at Xbox program. This is a feature that we have that we expect to be, you know, available to everybody in the platform over time. But this is something we haven't done in the past, so we're kind of going to follow a staged rollout model. We want to make sure people succeed. We want to make sure we get all the kinks out of the way, and then we'll make it available to everybody. So the way to join today is pretty simple. Just go to http://xbox.com/ID, apply to join the program. The program is now being updated so we can take Windows 10 title. The bar to enter is lower, of course, since we're now taking Windows 10 titles. It's not the same than you've had to do with console. So it's actually much easier for you to join, and then you're going to get the benefits from there. And the benefits are, or one of the benefits among there is that access to that SDK so you can take advantage of all the features that we just showed you. So go ahead and apply. They're taking applications now. It's just coming soon, but I checked with them, and they said, hey, you know, we're already, anybody that applies, we do get back to them and all that. It's not something that's coming in the future. It's something that we're thinking about immediately. And the next thing that I want to talk about while we're here is talk about the ecosystem update. Because as you see, we have the APIs. We brought in our SDKs. We're pretty much ready with regards to Windows 10. We're very, very far along. And now our partners need to come along with us because we know you care about the partners like Unity or Marmalade or any middleware, any kind of library that you're using. A lot of these partners are here on this partner show plan downstairs. So you should go talk to them if you're interested in any of their SDKs. Most of them will have RC bits. We're all going to be rolling them out in the next day or two because the whole when things should be rolled out, like today or tomorrow, is a little cloudy. But everybody's getting ready, and we're really excited to point you to their partner's booth instead of having you go ask them, hey, when are your bits going to be ready? Here's what I need. I know a few of them that released today because I got the email. Monogame, you can download from their website already today. I know Cocos2D, which comes from Microsoft because it's an open tech, open source implementation. It's already posted online. I know Yo-Yo was posted earlier today, and Marmalade will also be posting in the next day. So pretty much when it comes to middleware, we think we're ready. If there's one here that you don't see listed, don't think about or don't assume that it's not there. I just pointed a few that we know we're working with that are downstairs that we've talked to and we've been coordinating with. But there's a lot more coming. So if you see one that's not listed, just come talk to us afterwards, and we'll make sure we track it for you. So on that side, we're pretty ready for the ecosystem to come, and we're ready for your applications to come. And with that, let's talk about what we just saw.
Oh, wait, Jaime. I think these people want to see a game deployed to an Xbox console, right? Yes?
Is that why you're here? All right.
Yeah, I mean, why else would you come to this session?
So how much code do we have to change to go to console?
So I'll show you.
I'm just going to press F5 in Visual Studio here with the target being my Xbox over here, which...
Is it on? That's where I want it to be on the screen.
And while it deployed before the session,
F5 it.
Am I still on the network? Am I on the same network I started with? Is the Xbox on the network? Oh, boy.
Oh, the Xbox is live. Well, there's a pre-deployed version of it. I was going to do it live, but there's the game running on Xbox right now. So you can.
So that is the exact same game.
Exact
no
same game.
Code changes. Right, so that's the exact same game. If you summarize it today, and we should, you saw that game. We took it from Windows 8, and we dropped it on Windows Mobile or Windows Phone 10. No code changes, and it worked, right? Because everything was full screen. We also made a few code changes here for input, and we actually did a few code changes for Windows 8 for Windows 10 on the desktop. And then that is the exact same game you're seeing right now on the console. No code changes. Okay. And that's mono game. By the way, we chose C# because it's easier to type on stage. Everything we showed you works on C++. So for those of you that have C++ code, we just chose C# because we thought it'd be easier for us to type on stage. And that's actually one of our learning titles. By the way, the application's also open source. We have a game jump in 2 weeks, which is when we're going to release this version of the app because this is the Windows 10 version. And we usually have it on Monogame, Unity, Cocos. So we have it on different platforms, so you can go download it as a sample and get a good baseline to get jump started and see some of the APIs. That said, he tweaked 20 lines of code throughout the day, so you know you probably can get away without us giving you the sample.
Yep.
So again, let's close on what we saw because we want to make sure you leave with understanding where we think we're at. With Windows 10, we now have one core operating system against the whole family of Windows devices. Right? Phone, desktop, tablet, console, HoloLens. Oh, you thought I was going to give you something new, right? Nope. Whatever comes next, you'll be there, right? We also have one application platform that goes across the whole family of devices. You saw it right there. Zero code changes, and we were on the console, right? That is power right there. You will be able to reuse your game. You will be able to take everything you have and take it to different platforms. We brought this gaming network onto Windows. We brought that same gaming network experience onto the phone, right? So now you have access to Xbox Live. You have this very large social gaming network that you can take advantage to make sure that your game goes viral quicker, make sure your people are interacting more, make sure there's more engagement so you can take advantage of everything that we had on the console and apply those same patterns on the mobile devices or on your desktop. I didn't cover a lot in one store. There's three sessions throughout the conference, at least three that I know of, that where you're going to go in the next 2 days, learn more about the one store. So I didn't cover a lot more than that, but I can tell you this one thing. A year ago, I said you will publish it once. You will publish it once. That's the one thing you're going to learn in the next 3 days. So hopefully that's what you wanted. And with that, our takeaway is pretty simple. All these benefits, and all you have to do is tweak your code a few places, 20, 50, whatever it might be, a few lines of code. You got to get ready for universal. If you're on Windows Phone 8, or if you're on something like Windows Store for the 8.0 version, make sure you start moving to universal immediately, right? Remember, we have this program over the next year where we're going to tell people the first upgrade to Windows 10 over the next year is free. So we expect people to migrate quickly. You want to be ready. You want to be one of those people that gets there early because those people tend to make more money. So go ahead and go universal. It's that simple for our takeaway. I will have this slide again for your reference so you can go see all the sessions. If I was to call out a few, Adam Tulliper is going to be here on stage in the same room after us. He's going to show you Unity running on the universal Windows platform. Max McMulling is going to talk tomorrow about DirectX 12, much, much deeper for those of you that need to get down to that lower level. Barclay Hill and Jason will talk about our new packaging so you understand sizes and how one package goes across all of the platforms. So that's a really great session. Screencasting, again, Steven is here. He let us borrow his Xbox because ours failed earlier today. So you got to come to his session because we owe him big. Make sure you go to that one. And then on Friday, I want to highlight this one because this is the very last session, and it's probably, for me as a gamer, it would be one of my favorite ones. The one that says 765, it's app-to-app communication. If I was to tell you the problems that I think people on games from the last year and a half, when I helped lots of partners come, told me, hey, this is what's really hard to solve. Everybody wanted to solve input. We've solved input. Everybody wanted to solve store problems, or wanted to improve on the store, and we've improved a lot of that on the store. And the last one that everybody asks us about is app-to-app communication, right? How do I do offer walls? How do I communicate across my apps? How do I cross-promote? On Friday at 2 o'clock, that one session right there that says app-to-app communications is where you're going to learn a lot of that. You're going to learn how to communicate across apps, how to share state across apps. So for everybody here who has games, you want to usually go publish 20 games. You want to make sure you have offer walls across them. You want to make sure you communicate across, cross-promote them. That's where that session is going to be. So make sure you don't miss that one session. And with that, we thank you very much for coming. We're going to put the QR code so you can evaluate while you're here, because otherwise you'll forget. We take your feedback very seriously, so make sure you let us know what you like, what you didn't like. And we have time for questions, so please step up to the mic if you have any questions. And if you don't want to step up to the mic here, we're going to go to the Ask the Expert zones tonight at 6, and we're going to be in the Windows Insider area tomorrow morning. So go ahead and ask us any questions, and don't forget to submit your feedback, please. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you. With previous generations of the Xbox, deployment to the Xbox or use of the Xbox Live services required additional agreements and contracts. Is that also the case with the Xbox One, or is deployment and use of those APIs going to be open to us as developers without additional contracts?
Yep, that's a great question. So the question is, hey, you have, for example, you might have a retail Xbox at home right now that you cannot deploy to because you don't have an SDK agreement and all that. We already announced at GDC that later this year, we're going to give you the tools and utilities such that your retail console can become a dev console. So we're going to give you some toolkit there where you'll be able to run it and say, oh, now I can deploy from within Visual Studio. You didn't see his UI, but he was deploying from within Visual Studio 2015. He was doing F5 and actually deploying and debugging and everything else. We're going to give you special little tools that you're going to be able to do that with your retail kit. It's coming later in the year, so stay tuned for that. If you need it immediately, ID at Xbox is the way to get some of those things today. So we're taking Windows 10 apps, and we're going to make sure we prioritize people that are going across our myriad and our broader device of a broader family of devices.
Yeah, earlier today in the keynote, we learned that King used the Project Islandwood to get Candy Crush, and they were going to make more games. If the vision, there's a sign-up page on as well, if the vision for Microsoft is to support compilation, the ability to get iOS games onto Windows with the ability to have light-up features such as live tiles, platform integration, and potentially Xbox Live integration in the form of a universal app, why would an existing publisher like Supercell or new publishers or independents actually start from the ground up on a universal Windows app and not just port from Android or iOS?
Yep. So I'm going to give you two-part answers because I don't want to dodge your question, but tomorrow when we talk about Angle, there'll be a session where we talk about Angle, which is native APIs, and I know King is going to talk about their vision there and where they're going. So King started with, I think it's called Ironwood now, so the technology, King started there, But once they got to the platform and they saw everything we could do, they say, okay, we're going native. So Ironwood is a really good way for people to get started and explore. And it works, so you can continue going that path. But we do want you to go native, and we want you to get more out of the platform. So it's kind of a stepping stone. It was a great way for them to get started, get familiar with the platform, and then step in. So I highly recommend. First of all, if not everybody knows it here, Angle is OpenGL on Windows. So go to that session tomorrow, because if you're a gamer, you need to learn about OpenGL on Windows anyway. It's something that we implement from a Microsoft standpoint. We open source, we collaborate with Google, and make sure that's running really great. So there's a really great session tomorrow, and then you'll hear from there, from even people there talk about what King is doing and how they're already going native to get more out of the platform. So it's not a vision. What we want to do is we want as many games for our users in order for us to grow, right? There's growth that we need to drive, and in order for us to grow right now, we need as many apps in our platform as possible. We need to grow the user base, and for that, if we bring some Android games, if we bring some iOS games through something like Ironwood, it benefits us because the user base is growing, and it benefits you because there'll be more users, and you'll be able to leverage your skills to build more games, and you'll be able to continue doing what you're doing.
It's an advisory question for clients. You know, if you're able to say there's technical limitations at the moment, but in the future they'll be resolved, or it's fundamentally just for apps or these types of games without the additional complexity, then you can advise them appropriately.
Yeah. Yep. So again, I'll give you a short answer, and then tomorrow at 4:30, actually, for those of you that have really good questions, first of all, the Ironwood team is on the floor where you ask the experts. Three of them are there. We talked about it because I was involved in that project that you mentioned, Keith. So we talked about it earlier with the announcement. We were super excited. So they're on the floor. And tomorrow at 4:30, Channel 9 Live, they will have a Q&A with the PM for Ironwood. And I'll be there because I've been involved in several Ironwood projects. So if you have questions that you want to tell them, hey, what's your guidance, what works and what doesn't, I highly recommend you go to that. I don't know where it's going to be, but it's live online. We will take questions, and we'll be able to answer all your questions. With regards to guidance, come talk to me afterwards, or go talk to the Ironwood team directly, because there's gotchas, right? Like everything else, not everything works perfectly. So it's not going to be, we turn it in and it's not going to be, we press the F5 and everything works. There will be tweaks and things that you have to learn, and it comes down to what version of, say, UI kit you have, what, libraries you're using, whether you use notifications, how you have implemented your store. So there's a lot of gotchas there. Ironwood does make it easier. I can tell you from projects that we've done, we definitely looked at schedules and we said, oh, it's going to take us, 12, 14 weeks to rewrite. And then we look at Ironwood and said, oh, we can get there with 6 weeks, right? Some of them was tweaking the code, others were testing, because the 14 weeks included our testing. So it definitely makes things easier, but it's not something that we would tell you, oh, stop doing native, go all the way out. You always get a little bit more out of native, of course. So that's kind of where we're at. And again, feel free to come up and throw us some rude questions tomorrow. Otherwise, I'm going to be bored right there. So anything else? Again, the one takeaway, go ahead and ask your question.
In terms of universal apps, if I build a game for Xbox One, I'm going to want really high detailed textures, large textures, big meshes. But for the Windows Phone, they'll be smaller. Does the Windows Phone get all the extra resources that the Xbox One gets with? So will it get the textures as well, or will there be intelligent packaging involved?
Yep. So that's a great question. So it's kind of a, hey, I can write the games once now. What about, is now my Windows Phone game going to be 25 gigabytes? Yeah. And the answer is no. The way you have control over how you package your assets. Our packaging model, this is where Jason's session Barclay Hill session tomorrow on packaging will give you some advice. But for the last few years, we already have been able to segregate packages based on languages, based on feature levels in DirectX. So you can actually go back and say, oh, here's my assets for DirectX feature level 9.3. Which will be what goes on the phone, and then you can go back and say, oh, here's my assets for DirectX feature level 12 or feature level 11, and you'll be able to segregate those. And then our platform does a really great job at optimizing the download. So we download only what's needed, and we make sure we even share across libraries, and we do a few other things there. So Jason Salami and his session, he's going to talk a little bit about it, and then if you want to dive deeper than that, after the session, just say, hey, Jaime said you could tell us how to tweak the knobs and make sure that we optimize the size. And there's a lot of control that you can. So as long as you're willing to optimize, there's a lot of control there to make sure that things are not downloaded twice. We even share, if you have five users on your Windows tablet, We actually make sure we download everything once, and then the other users are sharing so that we don't load everything twice. So we do a really great job at optimizing that. That's one thing that we're very proud of. And again, JSON is a great reference for that. So if there's no more questions, GDC videos, really, really, everything that we wanted to say about games is there. There's, you know, many, many hours. Go watch those, because we gave you a one-hour version of, you know, 8 hours worth of work over there. So make sure you go to Channel 9 and watch them. There's links on the presentation. Thank you very much for coming, and we'll see you around. Thank you.